It would look rather foolish for a man who was going out to build a house to show up on the job with nothing in his hand, with nothing to work with, and nothing to accomplish that job with. The builder is a man who gets his blueprints. And after he has gotten his blueprints, he orders his materials. He brings those materials to the site with all of the tools that are necessary. The hammers, the various types that are going to be needed to do the job, the saws, the drill, the planer, the sander, and whatever other type of tools or equipment that are necessary to build whatever is on that blueprint that individual brings with him. It would be rather foolish for him to be without any one of those tools, and you'll find that he brings every tool that is necessary to build what is ever on that blueprint. All tools to get the job done are brought. Each tool is necessary to get maximum efficiency in the building of that particular blueprint. God himself has given tools by which you and I can build his character. He has set down in his word the blueprint. He has also given the material out of which he is building something. He's given you. He's given me. He's made us flesh and blood, and he has therefore created that material out of which God is creating and building something. God adds to his people and gives to his people and shows to his people the tools. We talked about prayer as being a tool by which we build the character of God. We talk about Bible study as a tool that God expects us to use. We talk about meditation as being that which is so necessary to roll over in our minds and think on and muse over what God is doing with us and what he wants us to do under every circumstance. As Mr. Johnson pointed out this afternoon, we do have to think for ourselves, and we do have to meditate on the way by which we can make right and wise decisions and to build character. And all the way down the road, there are always the tests and the trials and the pressures. There are the continual hassles that human beings run into just living this life and just going through the experience of life. But there's one interesting tool that a lot of people don't take advantage of very often. In fact, if I were a betting man, if I were to ask you to raise your hands this afternoon and ask how many of you have used this tool in the past month, or perhaps in the past 6 months, or to put it another way, how many of you since the Day of Atonement use that tool, I would imagine that very few hands would go up, because it's not the kind of tool that we relish, that we look forward to. It isn't the kind of tool that is enjoyable to us. We feel like that of all the tools that God has given, why in the world did he ever give us that one? That one's painful. That one's a little difficult. It forces me into a situation that is just not quite according to what I like. And it creates some difficulties for me. Gives me a headache. Puts me in a bad attitude. Frustrates me because I don't seem to get anywhere with it. You know, I've heard these comments since I've been the minister here in Surrey about the subject of the tool of fasting. And yet, I think if we were to stop and really look at it and analyze the tool that God has given, it is the most fantastic. It is the most awesome and tremendous piece of equipment that men seem and women seem to not want to use, or they seem to allow to go rusty in their personal spiritual lives. It is something that when you begin to understand how to do it and where to do it and why to do it, and all the wherefores and whyfores, that when you get into the habit, the right habit, I do not mean ritual, but the right habit and the capacity to begin to exercise that tool, there is a certain sense of accomplishment and a deep enjoyment in what you have been able to do. But I think most people approach the subject in just a frame of mind of saying, oh no, you know, oh gag. And like, you know, you've heard the kids say, the Day of Atonement coming. So soon? You know, because they know that they're supposed to fast. So soon? Don't tell me. But it's the kind of a subject that you kind of want to put away a little bit, because it is not, to most people, enjoyable. Because they have really not quite learned and gotten the feeling of it and what it can do and what it can accomplish as a human being. And this afternoon, I want to do something that perhaps haven't done before here in the Surrey Church. I want to talk about the good thing and what it really can accomplish and how great a tool it really is, and yet how little it is used by so many people in God's church. Let's talk about it just a little bit. This is not going to even be the kind of sermon that, you know, I sit up here and I open the Bible and I romp and stomp on various scriptures and say, this is what we got to be doing. But I want to share with you a little bit some of my experiences in 22 years of being a member of this church, and the fasting that I go through, and the problems that my brethren and the people that I'm a minister of come up to me with. And I want to share some of those with you, and I want to show you how we go through some of these things because we don't understand. We don't really understand what this subject is all about. I think a lot of people feel that fasting is kind of like penance, that we're just pleasing God because He's kind of a harsh individual, and He expects us to deny ourselves. He expects us to go without food and water, and to just feel like we're wretched, and you know, your body is drying up, and your stomach is hurting, and your head is aching, and your eye is sitting out here about this far because you've got this miserable headache, and it's going, you know, and you say, stop that, come back in here, you know, and the eye stays out there, says, no, I'm not coming back in here because I want to feel miserable sitting out here about 2 feet away from your head, you know, and you say, oh, I'm so miserable, you know, I'm so hungry. Why does God have to have this kind of tool? And I know that just an awful lot of people have never really gotten the feeling of what it can do and how it can really help. I'd like to share that with you this afternoon, because I've learned some lessons from it, you've learned some lessons from it, and I think we can learn together some of the lessons that God wants us to understand about the subject. Let's turn for just a moment, if you'll pardon my preaching, to Matthew 6. Matthew the 6th chapter, because it tells you something here. Matthew the 6th chapter and verse 16, he talks about prayer. He talks about not doing your alms before men. He talks about the fact that when you do your alms, that is your giving, it's a way of life with you. You are to be doing that, but before God. Then he said, when you pray. When you pray. There's also the fact that prayer is a part of a Christian's life, just like giving. Giving is a part of a Christian life. Prayer is a part of a Christian's life, because he talks about when you do alms, when you pray. But down in verse 16, he says, moreover, when you fast on the Day of Atonement, don't be as the hypocrites. Now, you read that, didn't you? No, you didn't. You didn't read that, because I put it in there. When you fast on the Day of Atonement. Now, most of the brethren fast well, and they do a fine job in fasting on the Day of Atonement. They really do. Because misery loves company. And everybody is willing to be miserable on that particular day. And as I often hear people say, I have no problem with the Day of Atonement. Why don't you have a problem with the Day of Atonement? Because of the fact, generally speaking, because everybody in the entirety of the congregation is miserable too. And you say, well, God says to do it. I'm commanded to do it. I have no other alternative. And beside that, everybody else is doing it. And it's a little bit easier in a certain way to fast. But when it comes down to this thing of, as it says in verse 16, when you fast, there is another time, there is another period in your life as an individual outside of the Day of Atonement, outside of this coming Sabbath, which is a called fast, in which there is a giant purpose and a reason for us to go without food and water for a period of time in order to draw close to God, and to show God as a congregation what we need before Him. But when you get outside of those two realms of a church fast and the Day of Atonement, then you get into another area altogether. And people find it very, very hard. They find that they will come up with all kinds of reasons, all kinds of situations which will not allow them to enjoy and partake of this one great tool that is there. And you'd be surprised how many dozens of reasons why people will not fast. They say, I have no purpose for fasting. They say, I just don't find that I can fast very well other than on these commanded fasts. That people talk about, well, fasting is is just a problem. I have a headache all the time from it, and I don't want to get sick, and I don't want to have a problem. And so they'll draw back from it, whatever the reason might be. In the case of many people, they just simply remove themselves from the idea of ever thinking about it. It runs through their mind for a little while. It pains them just to think about it, and then they say, oh, no, you know, and they put it away. We all like to eat. We all love food. It is the most delicious tasting thing on the face of the earth. I think a cold glass of something and a warm meal going down, the satisfied feeling that you get from that just makes you feel good. When I go home after this sermon, which I preached this morning too, I am going to eat like a horse because I have been preaching about it. Have you ever noticed how somebody who preaches about famine and he really gets going on the subject of famine, that everybody in the church for a week after really stocks up on the food and really eats? Have you ever noticed that? I find I eat twice as much in the week that I'm going to preach a sermon on famine. And the reason for it, I think, is just psychological. But everybody loves to eat. I love to eat. You love to eat. Now you say, I can do without, you know, excessive amounts of food, but nevertheless, we all love to eat. It's all a part of living. But Jesus said in verse 16, when you fast, so it's a period of time that is going to be set aside by a Christian in his life at times when no one else knows about it. When he finds the need and he finds the desire. That's another point. You not only have a need, but you have to have a desire. And I think sometimes we get the idea that the only time you should fast is when there is a giant trauma. That's true, that in the Bible people did fast and they did pray when there was a giant trauma. But there's a time also when you have a desire and need to learn to desire to get away from it all, as I'm going to show you in just a moment. And it's right and it's true and it's good. Jesus said in verse 17 of this chapter, but you, when you fast, he said, don't be like these hypocrites. He said, you anoint your head. I assume that gives me the authority now to be a greaser, but I'm not sure. But it does say to anoint your head. You know, it means to comb your hair. They let their hair disheveled and fall down over their face. But he said, anoint your head, wash your face. And it's a matter of personal appearance. That you appear not unto men to fast, but unto your Father which is in secret. And your Father which sees in secret shall reward you openly. Now it says simply that fasting brings a reward. And people say, I don't see any reward. Well, I'm going to show you what kind of rewards will come from fasting and how it is such a tremendous tool, a dynamic tool in all of the things that God has given for the sake of human beings. But he said, your Father which sees in secret shall reward you. Openly, of course, in the King James Version may not be in there, but the point is that in the end, when it's all said and done, you will be rewarded openly. You really will be rewarded openly. Notice over in Matthew 9, Matthew the 9th chapter, verse 14. Then came to him the disciples of John, saying, why do we and the Pharisees fast often? Now somebody said, well, that's ritual. That's tradition. They did it because it was a ritual or a tradition. They fasted 2 days in the week, whatever it was, Monday and Thursday. I forget the exact days that they used for fasting. It was twice in a week. Remember the Pharisees said there in Luke 18, I fast twice in a week. Jesus said, or they were talking to Jesus, and they said, why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples fast not often? I mean, that's the understood statement. Jesus said unto them, can the children of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? The day will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then they shall fast. And what's the understood implication of the verse? They shall fast often, because they have had the one that they were close to taken away from them. They didn't have him in person any longer. Therefore, they were by themselves, and they needed then. They needed to fast. And as Jesus said, when you fast, and his implication here in verse 15 is going back to verse 14, they fasted often. Now somebody said, well, how often is often? The Bible doesn't give you any statement of often. It doesn't talk about having a traditional once a month or once every 6 weeks fast. It doesn't say anything about that. But it does say even outside of emergencies, it does say that there are times when one needs to learn the habit and the attitude and the desire has to be a part of your life. You hear people say, I need to fast. Why do they need to fast? Well, they really don't know why, but they read it in the scripture and they get to feeling guilty about it. But there is actually a need, but that need is one that the individual must begin to, what shall we say, generate within themselves to see the need for themselves to fast and to draw close to God through that particular thing. So we read in verse 15 that the children would fast. It would become a part of their way of life. They would learn a great deal from it. And one of the greatest things that they're going to learn is how to draw close to the bridegroom. That's basically the overall idea that is mentioned here. Now over to 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter, 1 Corinthians 7. I think it's an interesting thought that is made here. This is on the subject of marriage. On the subject of marriage and living as husband and wife and rendering due benevolence unto each other, as the Bible says in verse 3. Verse 5, it says, defraud, or as the King James should be, refuse you not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer. It's something that you have to give yourself to. There comes a time when an individual wants to remove themselves from the normal routines and the normal rat race of life and set themselves apart for a period of time, whether that be for a few hours or whether it be for a whole day, where they try to remove themselves from the mainstream of humanity and take the time to draw close to God. Like it says in the book, it says, go into your closet, close the door, pray to your Father which is in secret. And I think it comes down to the fact that you have to come to the place where, as it says here, that you have to give yourself to fasting and prayer. You have to give yourself, because there has to be times in an individual's life when he needs to have his batteries recharged for no other reason than to realize that he needs to recharge his batteries. Mr. Herbert Armstrong will take literally a couple of weeks to go out to a place like Palm Springs, or now, of course, he lives in Tucson part of the time, and he will take the time off, not to fast for 7 or 8 days in a row or anything like that, but to get himself away from the mainstream. And he will take a period of time in which he removes himself from the telephone, he removes himself from people, and he just goes off and he opens his Bible and he studies and he takes the time for meditation, and then he also removes himself from food for a short period of time. And that short period of time in which he has removed himself from food, he has spent that time in extra prayer and extra Bible study. And the whole purpose behind that is to literally regenerate or to charge his batteries. And every human being, no matter who you are, there needs to be a time of quietness. Jesus said, take yourselves apart for a little while. Remember the statement that he made there? He told his disciples, look, we're here, we're going out all the time, we're on the go, we're running, people are coming to us. He said, draw yourselves away for a little while. And everybody needs that. Even the last one of us who thinks that we don't, believe it or not, you do need a little bit of time to get away from the normal routine. And I think that's why in my class coming up next week or the week after, I don't know which it'll be, we talk about married couples taking a weekend, taking a few days together without the children, shocking as it may seem, and go off somewhere and regenerate your batteries, whether it be for a day or 2 days, to get away from the normal things. Christ said right here that sometimes you need to get away from the routine of life, so therefore you get away from the marriage relationship for a day, for a half a day, for 2 days, whatever is the particular need, so that you can regenerate your batteries. And I think, brethren, in this day and age, we need that more than at any other time in the history of the world, as far as I'm concerned, because we are running so fast that I don't think we have the capacity to get off the treadmill. And I think we in God's church just simply have to say, hey, I'm going to take the day. I know just the other day I was racing around. I had to go to Penticton for something, and then I came back to the office, and I hadn't eaten a normal meal in 2 days. I mean, just, you know how you eat. You grab a sandwich, or McDonald's becomes the place that you inhabit, or something like that. You know how it is. You just go all the time. And so somebody called me on the phone in the office. And so John said to me, he said, so-and-so wants you to call him right now. I said, tell him I'm going to lunch. I'm going to eat for the first time in 2 days. I'll call him in 2 hours. And I went out and I sat down and I had myself a normal, decent lunch with forks, knives, and spoons, you know. And I had someone serve me, and I had a meal with several of the ministers, and I just had a chance to kind of let down and relax. And I came back to the office, and I was ready to tackle the tiger, or whoever it was. You know, I don't know who was it I had to deal with in that particular case. But like the Bible said here, that you need to separate yourself from the normal routine and for a time give yourself to fasting and to prayer. And then he said, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. God's church through the years has always fasted. It fasted during problems. It fasted during crises. It fasted during a time when they had to ordain elders. It fasted during a time when they were running into difficulties. And they fasted at a time when they themselves needed to have their batteries recharged. Not just as a church, but as an individual. And it was so necessary that the Apostle Paul mentioned this in 1 Corinthians 7 for the sake of those people. And I think we in God's church need to just simply take the time out to take a day, once in a great while, whenever the need does arise. And I use that term, need. And I think you as an individual have to judge that particular thing. I ask the question, what is fasting? It is the art, or shall we call it the way of simply abstaining from food and most of the time from water for a short period of time in which you have an exerted effort to draw close to God. Fasting is not abstinence to please a harsh God. It just isn't. It is something that you willingly want to do. It's something that you willingly need to do. And I think there, again, is a frame of mind that you and I have to come to as members of God's church. It is not penance. I know a lot of people figure that, boy, they just have to deny their body and beat it down and make sure that they humble themselves, you know, and just do this penance because God wants to see them suffer. And to them, fasting is suffering, and fasting is terribly difficult. And therefore, they are trying to do penance before God, trying to afflict themselves in either mental pain or physical pain in order to please Him. But it's not penance. In no way is it penance. And of course, it's not trying to get God. It's not trying to get God to answer. Fasting is a painful experience. I don't disagree with that. Fasting requires self-discipline. I think an individual has to simply exert a little bit of willpower. They have to exert a little bit of character to prod themselves to fast. You will never fast unless you prod yourself. You will never fast unless there is, frankly, the push of the human being, the willpower to do it. I know a lot of us in God's church say, fasting puts me in a bad attitude. And God doesn't want me in a bad attitude, so I'm not going to fast. Only when the church says that it's a fast day or on the Day of Atonement, because I don't want to be in a bad attitude before God. And I know people talk about fasting doesn't do anything for them. Well, the question is, what are they trying to get out of fasting? And why do you have a bad attitude? The answer is very simply that the body is changing its whole functional approach. And so you therefore have to make adjustments in your way of thinking in order to handle that. Sure, it's character building. It's what I would consider the smallest form of a trial to build you up as a member of God's church. It's the smallest form of a trial. I consider it the smallest because it really isn't all that difficult in that sense of the word to go without eating for a short period of time. I think that there are other things that are much greater trials upon the human mind and the human body than just going without food and possibly, as I say, in some cases, water for a period of, let's say, a day or a day and a half, something along that particular line. Over in Luke, the 9th chapter, I think it's a very interesting scripture that goes hand in hand with this. Luke 9. Are you still there? Yeah, you're turning now. Okay. Sometimes my congregation goes to sleep on me there, and I just want to be sure you're listening. Somebody says, yep. Luke 9 and verse 23. Jesus said to them, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself." Now, what is this? Will worship? What is this? This type of religion of the ascetics? The ascetics, I believe they call them, asceticism. Are we trying to get people to go around denying their bodies and beating upon their bodies to bring them into subjection? No. But it's just simply that the will of an individual has to be one that when they decide to do something, they are going to be in control of their mind and of their body. And it's the smallest form of a trial which creates within us the capacity to will and to deny ourselves. It helps us also later down the road to exercise a little bit of character in denying those things which are not good for us. To be able to push ourselves away from a table when we should push ourselves away. To say no to a drink when we know we shouldn't drink. To say no to a particular food that may be damaging or harmful to us as a human being. I think that's something that we have to realize, that whatsoever we serve, we are a slave to that. And whether it be food, or whether it be drink, or whether it be some particular thing, no matter what it is, like TV, if we're a slave to that and we can't go without it, we have to have it, then it becomes a problem. I know a lot of people find it very difficult to fast because they love their coffee. I love coffee too. I think that I used to drink coffee solely for the purpose of opening my eyes and getting started to generate my body, you know, something warm. But I found out I can use warm water to do the same thing. I found out I like the taste of coffee. That bitter flavor, there's something about it that's warm in the morning that just, I don't know, I just enjoy now. It still, of course, helps me to kind of get my lubricants lubricated, as they say, within about the first half hour of getting up. But I think a lot of people find themselves in a condition that on the Day of Atonement, when they are fasting and they haven't had any food for, let's say, 12, 15, 16 hours, that they almost get the delirium tremens, you know, from lacking a cup of coffee. And I found coffee and tea for some people was just a giant problem. It was just a giant problem and gave them headaches, and it gave them all kinds of palpitations in the stomach because of the fact that their body had withdrawal symptoms. Because it was always needing to be stimulated. And I think everybody enjoys a stimulant. I do too. But it does present a problem. And like it says in Luke, the 9th chapter in verse 23, that if an individual is in God's church, there's a time sometimes when you just simply say, no, I'm not going to do it. How many times have you, when you fasted, if you have, you've gone through the day, and you're coming down to about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and your wife is cooking supper, or you are cooking supper, whoever it might be, and it smells, I mean, when you're fasting, it smells so good. You know, your taste buds are sitting up on their proper height. They're about 4 feet up on your tongue, you know, looking down at what's in the pot, and your eyes and your nose and everything is just at its fullest glory of odors, especially if your wife uses garlic. You know, I mean, it permeates the whole area. And what happens? You say, well, I don't know why I'm fasting today. I don't know if I need to fast. Is there really any reason for me to fast? Well, yes, I should be fasting. I know I should because I need to draw close to God. But, is it that necessary to go this long? Well, you know, I can't see why. Besides, I'm getting hungry and my head's beginning to hurt. And I'm getting fuzzy, and certainly God wouldn't want my head to get fuzzy. And you begin to just watch the human reasoning. And I've done this. In fact, I've even stopped fasting on several occasions because I talked myself out of fasting. I only had to go another couple hours, and then the dinner would have been gone, and then I would have had nothing to eat. And I've done this. In fact, I've even stopped fasting on several occasions because I talked myself out of fasting. I only had to go another couple hours, and then the dinner would have been gone, and then I would have had nothing to eat. And I could have gone on into the night, except, of course, if I had raided the refrigerator later on at night when everybody was in bed, but that would have been cheating anyway. But, you know, you see this human reasoning. Well, here again, as I said in verse 23, that smallest form of denial of yourself is necessary in prodding you as an individual. It helps you build willpower. It helps you to realize that you can. You can master a body which wants to master the mind. And the cravings of the human body can become so great that you will give in to them. And when you do give in to them, then, as it says in Romans, the 6th chapter, in verse 16, then you can allow that to be your governor, and you become its slave. And I think in fasting, sometimes people don't realize how helpful it is to just simply say no to themselves, especially if it comes not just to fasting, but in certain areas where they need to say no to themselves. So, in Luke 9 and verse 23, it talks about denying yourself. You'll think of 1,000 reasons to eat. I don't know why it is. I don't know if you have this problem, but when I've decided to fast, I'll come home from the office and I'll sit down, and of course my wife's cooking dinner. And she's already known that I'm not going to be eating. That's no problem, but the odor is the first thing that hits you when you walk in the door, and you say, I'm not going to stay around here. I'm going upstairs to study, honey. So you take a magazine upstairs. The only problem is she doesn't have any magazines other than Good Housekeeping, Woman's Circle, or Woman's Day, and you open it up, and there in front of you, on page 23, is a German chocolate cake. Or you turn the next page, and there is a beautiful roast with potatoes and carrots, and, you know, just sitting in its gravy there. And then you turn the next page, and you see all these beautiful melons and fruits sitting there in this large bowl, and you slam it shut and say, this is ridiculous. And you put it down. And then you start to meditate. Let's see what I meditate on. How love I thy law. It is my meditation all the day and the night. Apples. Oh, could I go for an apple? No, now wait a minute. I'm fasting. I shouldn't think apples. But apples reminds me of grapes. And I love grapes. And grapes reminds me of wine. And man, could I go for a glass of wine? Now, what am I thinking about this for? So I say, I can't meditate. So what do? I'm going to go down and watch television. And so my kids are downstairs, and you walk downstairs, and the moment you walk down, there they are doing it all for you, McDonald's. And, you know, there they are sitting there with this juicy hamburger dripping down their hands, you know, or Wendy's, you know, this one, this advertisement from Seattle. And if it isn't that, it's a Seattle station pouring Rainier beer. And it pours down the side of the glass, and these bubbles are coming up, and you say, huh, huh. And so you go racing out of there, and so you start talking to your wife. And the first thing she says, well, honey, about that picnic we're going to have on Sunday, what do you think we ought to take? You know, and then you go screaming off into the bedroom again, and you try something else. I can't even read a Sports Illustrated. I can't even read a Sports Illustrated without finding food. And it just hits you from every direction. And you'll find of 1,000 reasons to eat, and all kinds of things advertising food, because that's the way that the human mind runs. But that's one of the things that God said that you learn from the day of fasting. It's simply a matter of, as it says in Luke 9 and verse 23, sometimes you simply have to deny yourself and take up your cross and go to the principle of fasting and exercise your will. Fasting teaches with feeling. Fasting teaches with feeling throughout the whole body, the subject of humility. It really brings a person into a configuration of humbling themselves, of just literally slowing down the bodily functions. Notice over in Psalm 35 and verse 13. Psalm 35 and verse 13, I find this a very, very interesting statement that David made. Psalm 35 and verse 13, he said, as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting. To humble your soul with fasting is very simply seeing when you are in the condition of going without food, how weak and how human and how utterly incapable you are of really being as stirred as you were when you had the full energizing power of food in your body. The facade seems to be stripped away from a human being. You kind of laid bare. You just the real you is there. And the real excitement and the real deep desire and the bubbling, outgoing type of personality isn't always there after you've been fasting for a little while. And without fasting, I think we as human beings admit mentally what we are. But you don't really comprehend or really feel the real humanness as a person until you take up with fasting. And it really is a tremendous experience to realize how unimpressive we are as human beings when we go without food for any length of time. And I think the point is driven home well, and driven right home to the pit of your stomach, I think, as a human being. Why do we fast? Very simply, to be brought to the reality of what we are. To be brought to the reality of what you are. Secondly, to be brought face to face with your dependency in everything upon God. I mean, you stop for just a moment and realize that if you keep fasting, you're going to finally die. Really, that's what you come down to. When you fast, you will finally come to the place where if you keep fasting, you will no longer have life. And it helps you realize how dependent you are upon God, because it weakens the human being to a certain degree. It just slows down the whole capacities of an individual, and it makes you want to have the blessings of God just that much more, the ability to enjoy the physical things that God has given. Of course, fasting, when you get your mind on it and get your mind on the Word of God, it just simply helps you to get away from the physical world and begin to concentrate on talking with and relating to God. You get the food, you get the drink, you get the physical surroundings out of your way, and your mind then can concentrate on drawing close to God. And that's what basically it's for. Now, you don't feel closer to God when you're fasting most of the time. Most of the time, you just feel lousy. Most of the time, you say, I feel miserable. But the point is, just by that continual turning of the mind toward that particular area, you are renewing and inspiring before God and before yourself the capacity to draw close to God and keep bringing your mind and your heart to the heavens. And that's one of the most important things, that you keep forcing yourself and your thoughts into that particular attitude of mind. I think you can go to places like 1 Kings, I don't want to go there and read it, about Ahab. Ahab realized when he was doing something wrong that if he simply went to fasting and he humbled himself, that God would look down on him. God looked down upon Ahab because he humbled himself. You find a number of examples that when the people of God fasted, God delivered them, sometimes immediately, sometimes down the road just a bit. I want you to turn with me, if you would, to Daniel, the 10th chapter. Daniel 10, verse 11. Daniel, the 10th chapter, and verse 11. Daniel was asking for deliverance, and he was asking for help. In verse 10, he said, "And behold, a hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands. And he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto you, and stand upright, for unto you am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. And he said unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you did set your heart to understand." Now that's the key to this whole business of fasting. And that is the fact that sometimes people feel that they're not close to God. They don't feel any closer to God when they end their fast than they did when they began it. They don't feel as close sometimes to God because of fasting as they do when they're eating. They say, I feel good when I'm eating, and therefore when I pray, I feel much better. But the point is that, as Daniel points out in verse 12, that God takes special note of an individual who is going to bring himself into the alignment of going without food and water for a period of time to align his mind with the heavens and to be at one with God. And he said, from the first day that you did set your heart to understand, and that was when he started to fast, and to chasten yourself, speaking of fasting, that's what he was doing, and to chasten yourself before your God, your words were heard. Now, a lot of people say, I don't get any answers when I fast. I don't see prayers answered. I don't see things begin to happen on my behalf. I don't know why I even do it, because I don't see any tangible results. But here Daniel was pointing out that if your attitude of mind is going before God to understand, if your attitude of mind is to chasten yourself before God, then from that time on, from the very day that you start, if you say, you know, I've stopped eating, I'm not going to eat anymore for the rest of the day, and I'm going to fast, God said here, your words were heard, because you set your heart to understand and to chasten yourself before your God. And so the angel said, and I have come for your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 1 and 20 days. And so for 21 days, Daniel had to wait. He had to wait almost a solid month before he got an answer to his prayer. And he was one of the great leaders of what we term pre-Christianity, or a patriarch of God. And yet he had to wait 21 days for an answer to his prayer. He had to wait 21 days for an answer. But the answer came. Sometimes the answer doesn't always come in the ways that you expect it to. Some people pray for deliverance and all they get is more trouble. I mean, I've heard people say, I fasted and I prayed and I said, God, deliver me. And the only thing that happened was double problems came. Kind of like the fellow that says, you know, somebody said, cheer up, things could get worse. So I cheered up and sure enough, things got worse. And you know, that's the way some people feel, that they want to get out of the problem. But in this particular case that the person told me about, the problem was with them and they had not learned. They had not learned to conquer the problem. Therefore, God allowed them to find themselves in greater straits for that period of time. Of course, we all know what Isaiah 58 is about. It's about fasting, and I don't want to cover the whole thing, but he's talking about the wrong kind of fasting. He talked about them finding their business and exacting all their labors on this particular day, as verse 3 said. And they would fast for strife and debate and to smite with the fist of wickedness. And in verse 5, he talked about how some people just have this humbling of themselves type of business. They deny themselves and they feel that they can go through this penance where they bow their head down as a bulrush and spread sackcloth, and somehow suffering is what God sees. But God said, that isn't the kind of fast that he's chosen. The kind that he has chosen is to loose the bands of wickedness, verse 6, and to undo the heavy burdens and to let the oppressed go free and that you break every yoke. The overall kind of a fast is one to be delivered from sin, to be able to be a, if you pardon the expression, a better person, and to build the character of God. And if you go into fasting from the point of view of simply saying, I fast because I want to be with God and I want to share my life with God and I want to take this time to draw close to God, then the end result is that God is going to draw close to you, because verse 9 said, then shall you call and the Eternal will answer. And that's the very basic point of it, of the whole thing. It isn't a matter of having to wait for a giant problem to hit you. But there is a time when sometimes you just feel the need to get away from it all and to get away from the rat race of life and draw close to God. And therefore, when you do, after the fast is over, down the road, God said, when you call, then he shall answer. And when you cry, then he shall say, here am I. And there's some other interesting side benefits. Verse 11. The Eternal shall guide you continually and make your soul and satisfy your soul in drought and make fat your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. There are certain physical commodities that come the way of an individual when they first of all establish that oneness, not a penance, but a putting away of sin, of gaining spiritual strength, of just simply wanting to be a little bit closer to God and realizing that they're not going to feel something during the fast. And sometimes you're going to feel worse during the fast. And sometimes when you ask for certain things, you're not going to get them in the way that you want. Or you're not going to get what you ask for in that particular way. But all the way down the line, you're still going to benefit because you have taken the time and you put away food from you for that period of time and drink if it is possible. And you've taken that time before God, whether it be 3 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours, 20 hours, and you say, hey, this is what I want to do, because God says, when you fast, to take time and to remove yourself from the normal routines of life to come before him. Yeah, there are a lot of other benefits, too. Doctors say that giving your body a rest once in a while from food, and he's just simply making the statement that letting the stomach rest, letting the gallbladder rest, letting the liver rest, letting the heart kind of not have to pump the extra amount of food for a period of time, gives the body kind of a chance to recoup, a chance to recharge its batteries physically. And it does help. it does help to have the side benefits and gives you a little bit better chance to get the body back into what we call fighting trim again. I think that's why Mr. Armstrong does it about once a year. Sometimes he doesn't do it all that often, but it really does help. Here are some things you can do that might help you. Take the opportunity that I've set before you this afternoon. I think it's a tremendous opportunity. Set aside some specific time in advance. I don't mean necessarily once a month, and I don't mean necessarily from the point of view of every 4 weeks or every 6 weeks. I'm not talking about that, but the fact that you know that you need to get away from the normal routine. Find some time. If you're going to decide to fast, let's say, from breakfast until dinner, or maybe fast from lunch till the next morning. Whatever way that you want to do it, the Bible doesn't specifically tell you that you have to start at sundown and go to sundown. The Bible doesn't say that you have to miss three meals to be righteous. It just simply says, take the time to get away and to take the time that you normally eat in the normal routines and go before God's throne. Take that time. Set it aside. Sometimes there'll be an emergency. I realize that, but most of the time there isn't. Set some time aside for yourself. Prepare everything so that you can set that time aside. If it's your job, the day that you're off. If you have to fast on a Sabbath, maybe that's necessary if there is a specific need. Hopefully you don't have to most of the time because it is a feast day. But if you're a wife, maybe you can just get the meals prepared so you don't have to sit across from somebody and watch them eat. That presents enough of a problem. Don't let anything interfere with it. You know, don't let excuses and feelings and ideas come in the way. Don't reason around it. But have a specific purpose or specific purposes. Have a goal and then go after that goal and take the time to do that, because it really does pay big dividends in the end. Not necessarily right when you're doing it or right after, but it does pay big dividends, and there's fruit that is born down the road. Jesus said that your Father shall reward you openly. That's what it says. He may not reward us openly right now, but in the end He will reward us openly. You can begin by just simply removing yourself from food and drink for a short period of time if you have trouble fasting. Maybe you want to just fast for one meal, maybe two, and then you can build up to a full 24 hours if you so desire. You can begin morning or evening, but use your free time or relatively free time and you'll find that it'll really work. Those of you who drink a lot of coffee, you might find that the day or two before, just simply remove yourself from coffee or, as they say, taper off. Because some people need to taper off. Just simply taper off from drinking all that excess coffee, and you'll find that you probably won't have a headache during that time. You'll probably feel a little fuzzy, but it'll still be the time that you can use. Take the meal time to pray. Use your Bible and study it. Meditate on those things that you have. Sleep a little bit during that period of time. Just regenerate your batteries. Continue to do that as long as you can in that, say, day of fasting or 6 hours, whatever that might be. I think you'll find that you will learn from it and that you will grow from it, and there will be great benefits to your fasting. I'm not talking in any way about 40-day fast. I'm not talking about 3-day fast. I'm not even necessarily talking about 36-hour fast. I'm just talking about what it says that Jesus said in Matthew 6 when He said, when you fast, just simply remove yourself and take the time and come before God, put away food, put away water, and get your Bible out and have that purpose and desire to draw close to God. And so that when you cry to God and say, God, here am I, He's going to say, here am I as well. I'm ready to listen. I'm ready to hear. And I'm ready to help. And you'll find, brethren, if you work at just simply drawing close to God on a regular basis, and I say regular, I think you understand what I mean, you'll find that your whole life will begin to improve, and you'll begin to see fruits as you look back over the year, or over the years. I know it works. I've seen it work. I am convinced without a shadow of a doubt that it works. And I think you'll find that it will work. But all you have to remember is, don't look at what you're doing right then in the sense of the word of looking for tangible results. Do it because God said it's good for you. And gradually down the road, as you continue to do it, you find, and you will find, that you will be blessed. You will see benefits. You will see blessings over that period of time. So if you've used sleep and you've used food in order to build your physical life, If you've used the period of exercise to build your muscles, why not take some time and use fasting to help build in your life those things that are so needful spiritually? It's a tremendous blessing. It's a tremendous opportunity. All you have to remember is that it's for your good, and it will pay, when it's all said and done, big dividends for you spiritually.